Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Nick Hilton and I'm joined now by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. So today we've had a statement from Michel Barnier saying that he needs clarity within 2 weeks on the UK's Brexit position before the council meeting in December. What does this really mean?
They want some more assurances on the money before they'll agree to move to trade and transition in December. It won't have escaped the notice of the EU's negotiators that Theresa May is now in such a weak position that if she failed to get trade and transition at the December Council, I think her position would be very, very vulnerable back home. So I think they are trying to kind of put the squeeze on to get some guarantees on money and possibly also the Irish border issue before they say, yes, okay, we can proceed. And I think the significance of what Barnier was saying about 2 weeks is that basically don't think that Theresa May can turn up at this dinner with other EU leaders and conduct the diplomacy there. This offer will need to be on the table before then.
And Isabel, how well positioned is David Davis and his team to actually meet this 2 week deadline?
Well, I think as James says, a lot of this has to do with the weakness of Theresa May at home, given we've now had 2 weeks of cabinet resignations and an ongoing row about sexual harassment. It's very easy for the EU negotiators to use this to push Britain, because Britain is looking very weak in the negotiations. But the problem is that the demands from Michel Barnier are not exactly easy topics to resolve, and the Britain clarifying in the next fortnight on what it would pay to settle the bill to the EU is quite a big issue. Even though Barnier said today it is just a matter of settling accounts, as in any separation. Well, most people who have seen separations take place know that always promises to be easy and ends up taking a lot longer than expected, as Neil Ferguson warned in our magazine when the referendum campaign was underway.
We also saw Lord Kerr, the author of the Article 50 part of the Lisbon Treaty, come out and say that, oh, it could be undone. Is this a part of a concerted strategy from the EU to turn up the heat on the Brexit negotiators?
I would say it's part of a concerted strategy from those in this country who haven't come to terms with the referendum result to kind of push and say, look, we don't have to do this. I mean, the Article 50, right, everyone knows, but whatever the legal state of it, it's essentially a political thing. And this is, you know, yes, it can't, it would end up in the European Court of Justice, but this would essentially come down to politics, whether it can be revoked or not. And I think that there are a growing number of people on the old Remain side of the argument who hope that the public at some point or Parliament at some point will say, okay, let's not do this. I personally think I don't see any signs of that happening yet.
Gordon Brown was quoted as saying he thought there might be a tipping point this summer where public opinion turned against the kind of a calamitous Brexit.
Yeah, but I think the part of the problem with this is when you talk to politicians about what they think is going on, they say lots of voters think that kind of Brexit has kind of happened. But, you know, the view of the public is get on with it. I also think this. I think if the EU attempts to kind of humiliate Britain by kind of saying basically, right, your only choice is to stay in or take this absolutely appalling deal, I think that a lot of the public will react with a kind of very well alone then attitude. I don't think the EU trying to bully Britain is going to go down well with British public opinion. I don't think it's going to make this 52% of people who voted to leave think, oh, I regret my choice now. Now I better stay in, because they're telling us they'll be really nasty to us on the way out.
Another major issue that needs to be resolved by December is the status of Northern Ireland. Isabel, we've had some mixed messages on what's going on there. Where do things currently stand?
Well, we've had more frank discussions, apparently, about the Irish border, which is the phrase that David Davis and his colleagues always use about this topic, along with the following phrase, which is, we're determined to resolve this without suggesting any particular solutions. David Davis said today, as well as claiming there were frank discussions, he said any solution could not be at the expense of the constitutional integrity of the UK. So there was a suggestion in a paper from the EU that Northern Ireland may need to stay in the customs union if there are to be no checks at the border, which obviously the DUP would not accept.
Look, I think the idea that you could put the border, you could have a kind of Ireland of Ireland solution, and then the border could run, the customs border could be between Northern Ireland and mainland Britain, would I think be for the birds in any circumstance. But in a circumstance in which the Conservative Prime Minister is dependent on the DUP for her majority in the House of Commons, it is particularly for the birds. I think the not to carry on talking about birds, but I think that the solution that might be offered is some acceptance of all Ireland. I'm going to get this phrase wrong in a second. Agro-physio standards or something like that, which is essentially the physio-sanitary standards. Sorry, that's it. So that essentially within Northern Ireland, you could continue to have the free movement of agricultural produce and goods within the island of Ireland, because essentially, in crude terms, you wouldn't be able to buy chlorinated chicken in Northern Ireland.
And we've also seen today Alex Salmond doing what all sort of semi-disgraced politicians seem to do these days, which is taking on a talk show on a propagandist TV network, this case Russia Today. He's got a bit of a dressing down from Nicola Sturgeon.
I think it's very significant that Nicola Sturgeon has decided to put more distance between herself and Alex Salmond than I've ever seen her do before. And I think that basically saying she'd rather he'd taken the show to kind of almost any other TV network than Russia Today. I think the point about this is Salmond is arguing that his own show won't be controlled by the Kremlin. I'm sure that's true. But what Russia Today are trying to do is they're trying to establish enough other legitimate content so that people take their propaganda more seriously. If it was just all propaganda all the time, I don't think people would be so concerned about Russia Today. It's because it is very cleverly mixing propaganda and normal television, but that is the corrosive effect it's having.
But he's a private citizen now. If he wants to represent the Kremlin's interest rather than the people of Scotland, why not?
Yeah, but then you should take the condemnation, the moral condemnation that comes with that.
Yeah, and as James says, actually, you know, Nicola Sturgeon made clear that though he's now a private citizen and is entitled to do whatever he wants, she wouldn't advise him to do that, and that she will continue to criticise Russian policy as she wants. Now, he was on Newsnight explaining his decision and said that he was going to show how independent the show was going to be by having discussions about the apology that the Scottish government has made to those who were convicted of homosexuality when it was still a crime. But as James says, this isn't just about someone having a show where they feel they can be free to criticise the Kremlin. It's also about the legitimacy of the channel itself. And having guests on who were former first ministers of Scotland is a real coup for RT, and not a good coup in terms of freedom of the press.
So finally, we've limped to the end of what has been another calamitous week. Who are the biggest losers of all the unravelling of the past few days?
Well, look, Priti Patel has obviously lost her cabinet job. But I think more broadly, that the last week has kind of added to this sense that the government is in a funk, is in crisis, and has increased the pressure on it ahead of the budget and then the European Council in December. I think losing one cabinet minister could be considered unfortunate, but to lose two does begin to look like carelessness.
Thank you, James and Isabel. And you can subscribe to this podcast, Coffeehouse Shots, on the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can subscribe to the magazine itself from just £1 a week at spectator.co.uk/podoffer. And we'll even throw in a red moleskin notebook. Thanks for listening.